The Gates of Horn and Ivory, by Francis Rosenfeld. Chapter 3. The Dionysia. Persephone used the pretext she had to oversee the progress in the barley fields to take her leave from the city, which was bursting at the seams with crafting festival paraphernalia, cooking, and the stress people always experience on the eve of major holidays. The city's noise and bustle gradually disappeared as the goddess ventured into the fields, which had already been ploughed and sown, and whose fresh shoots were starting to emerge, green and slender like grass. The clearings and meadows overflowed with daffodils, and though the air was still cool, Persephone felt Gaia's vibrant return to life. The honeybees, her underworld messengers, emerged from crevices and hollows to greet their mistress with the latest news from home. She watched them dance their messages, smiling to old memories, intoxicated with the scent of daffodils and caressing the tiny shoots of wheat as if they were her little children, gathered round to bask in her presence. Such blessed peace she felt in the fields, whose bounty filled her heart more than any offerings left on the steps of her altars. The world of plants, over which she ruled jointly with her mother, worshipped her, smitten, growing flowers in her footsteps and rewarding her slightest smile with overflowing bounty. In this idyllic land of agreeable weather and ample provision, the people had made nature their home, finding safety and freedom in it, with no need for walls. Under the midday sun, gazing upon the serene hills, the sea, and the city, which looked diminutive in the distance, humans felt as powerful and immortal as the gods. Hence, the embodiments of their lofty ideals enjoyed their eternal life outdoors as well, amongst rivers and forests, accompanied by a large following of nymphs, dryads, heroes, demigods, and mythical monsters, all with specific roles, inspiring their own devotees. The complex tapestry of their relationships, errors, and conflicts formed a narrative richer than any theatrical production, portraying conspiracies, love, and loss. Despite officially residing on Mount Olympus, the gods roamed the earth, mingling with humans and indulging their whims, spreading around both blessings and mischief. Persephone's family was a difficult and demanding bunch, prone to fits of anger, taking whatever it pleased and dispensing favors capriciously. Its rowdy, jealous crowd, always on the watch for rivals who might lessen the offerings at their temples, was the perfect embodiment of raw human nature. The gods controlled the forests, streams, fire, oceans, sun, moon, night, and stars. Every detail of life was overseen by a god who demanded worship and sacrifice. With little recourse against their omnipresent power, the humans resigned themselves to the gods' volatile tempers, which turned their lands into battlefields and their lives upside down. Awestruck and cautious, they observed the immortals from a safe distance, weary of their whims and wrath, rather indifferent to their melodrama. "There you were," Demeter saw her daughter from afar and rushed towards her, all the while taking stock of the agricultural progress the latter had fostered with approving nods. "The Basilissa is seeking your blessing for the Hieros Gamos. She is to wed the god Dionysus himself in sacred ritual tonight." Speaking of self-indulgent gods, Persephone thought, "Can't they let these poor people consummate their marriage in peace, without expecting them to surrender their bodies to jaded deities just to allay their boredom? It is a sacred rite, Persephone," her mother continued, "and it would behove you to approach it with decorum. And stop rolling your eyes, it's unbecoming an Olympian. Why isn't Dionysus advising?" "It's his party," Persephone objected. "The Basilissa feels more comfortable discussing the details with a woman. And naturally, she thought of me. I can talk to her if you prefer," Demeter started.
"Would you?"
"Absolutely not. She made special offerings to your temple, and sought counsel from your priestesses for prophecy and omens. Why on earth would she want to see me instead?" "Why did you offer, then?" Persephone asked herself. It was a rhetorical question. She was used to her mother's random tests, which were always offered as surprises and served only one purpose: to draw out unacceptable emotions and behaviors in her daughter and nip them in the bud. "Good grief, I miss Hades. Doesn't my cousin ever get fed up with this stuff? You know he never shows up personally to these functions. People like to imagine themselves gods for a day. It's good for our image." Persephone remembered her last meeting with Dionysus, carried among the fast-emptying wine amphorae and progressively unsteady companions, and couldn't help wonder which one of the drunken entourage was going to show up for the feat this time. Her peaceful daydreaming in the daffodil fields, surrounded by bees and sunshine, was over. Back at the temple, prostrations and ritual offerings behind her, Persephone finally understood her role in this story. She was to bless the psychotropic mix of plants used for the ceremonial brew and perfect their synergy. Henbane, belladonna, mandrake, and aconite, the dark daughters of the earth, her humble servants and her wards, showed up to assist her in her quest. They could be merciless, the mighty children of the underworld. They could empower oracles or bring death just as quickly if misused. They instilled apprehension in the humans, but were fiercely devoted to their mistress, who fostered and respected their gifts. It was hard for the mortals to see beyond the veil, so the fearsome plants of the lower realms came to their aid. They opened portals, so humans could enjoy the vision of the gods, albeit briefly. Persephone closed her eyes, and in the world behind her eyelids, the proud mandrake, the keeper of mysteries and gateway to Hades, made herself manifest before her, revealing to the goddess the insight required for the perfect plant blend. The basilissa bowed humbly, holding on to the small pouch of herbs, and took her leave to prepare for the ceremony. Persephone's attention veered off to the last days of the festivities, which culminated with the procession honoring the dead. What strange creatures humans were, unable to disentangle fertility from death, an unlikely combination which fueled their devotion to her, and made her the goddess of both. Lust and grief were never parted in their presence, feeding on each other in an endless loop of despair and hope. Wine, the paradoxical morning libation which accompanied these mixed emotions, the gift of Aleos and Hecate, infused and heightened them, offering people liberation and unchaining their sorrows simultaneously, allowing even the most guarded humans a temporary reprieve from the silent carrying of their burdens. Any mundane activity becomes a ritual when it has an intention behind it, sustained by devotion and the presence of the spirits. Powered by the double impetuses of wine and ritual, the crowd stopped being a random gathering of individuals. It released their souls into a joined consciousness, one where they could experience life beyond boundaries for a while, before it pulled them apart and sent them back to their daily living. The Dionysian rites were all about surrender. For the participants, relinquishing their bodies to the gods was the ultimate expression of trust, a symbolic self-sacrifice whose full abandon and abrogation of will allowed them to leap, if only for a moment, into the experience of being gods themselves.